Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. The protests of mothers in Almaty, Astana, frustration of oil workers in Janus, and growing anger involving the treatment of ethnic Kazakhs in Xinjiang, and then Nazarbayev's decision to fire his entire government. Lately, a lot has been happening in Kazakhstan, and the development this week is, in apparent attempt to defuse tension, the new government has announced a $3.6 billion spending plan directed to address some of these issues. And we are here to unpack some of those developments, particularly their connections to each other, and try to make sense of how Kazakhstan got to this point and where things are headed going forward. Joining me in the discussion are Ambassador William Courtney, former U.S. Ambassador to Kazakhstan, Dr. Lukan Chisci, Chair of Central Asian Studies at the Glasgow University, Dr. Erica Marat, Associate Professor at the National Defense University and author of Police Reform, Society Against the State in Post-Soviet Countries, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So, okay, let's start with the latest development. Who was paying more attention to the latest announcements by the government on social packages? Perhaps, Bruce, could you share some of the highlights on what the package was about and what did this include?
Well, I mean, you said it kind of in your intro. I think this was largely an attempt to diffuse some of the social tensions that have been building up in the country for a while. When you look at this on paper and see what happened, there wasn't really a whole lot of movement around. I mean, you know, they folded two ministries into one, and they changed a few people around. But you know, there was this statement that came out when Nazarbayev said, "I want the government to resign," and it looked like he was furious and he really wanted some change. And then a lot of the people that actually he did move out ended up in other prominent positions somewhere else. So he seemed to have just shuffled in some new people to create the illusion that there was going to be some changes. And you know, but now they're throwing all this money at it too. So yeah, you know, he made some changes, and certainly the woman that was in charge of labor and social protection, Madina Abilkasimova, with all the social problems, it was a bad time for her to be on the cover of Kazakhstan Forbes magazine as one of the rich people in Kazakhstan. Oh. So you know, that he wanted to move some of these people out, make it look like things were going to get better, and actually they are. Although I would argue, if you're going to throw $3.6 billion at it, even the people that were in power, probably, you know, the government that just got sacked could have done something with that money and made the same improvements. But Nazarbayev went for on both fronts. We got new people, they're going to get the job done, and we got this money that we're going to use, and you know, we're going to fund all these programs and your lives are all going to get better.
Erica, let's talk a little bit about the package, what this package includes, particularly the items on the package, and also the logic and the timing.
The logic and the timing, I think it has to do with a series of strange statements by Nazarbayev about the future of Kazakhstan, including, you know, the possibility of him resigning or whatever else. But also related to brewing tensions in rallies that didn't get as much coverage, or not sufficient coverage, I think, rallies in Zhanaozen. That are, compared to any parts of Kazakhstan, are really symbolic in their nature. So it is a response, but it's also sort of, I see it as cyclical. It happens, you know, it was a periodic repetition every few years, presented as a sense of reshuffling and deep reform, but not really making any substantive changes in how people are supported at their workplace, what are the opportunities presented to rural population and so on.
Ambassador, you know, you worked in Kazakhstan and you had dealings with some of those ministers in the country on the top level. So Central Asian authorities do not bow to the public pressure as quick as it happened this time, but they were quick in announcing these packages and dismissing the government, at least from the Nazarbayev's point of view. Was there anything particular which scared the authorities leading to this prompt response?
There have been some increased signs of unrest recently, and they go really back to the Zhanaozen episode. But recently, the authorities have been putting more journalists in jail. Just days ago, opponents of the regime were locked up, demonstrating against the monopoly political party. So I think what we're seeing is, if you will, a long goodbye. President Nazarbayev has been in power for a quarter century. Important reforms were made earlier, economic, some political reforms were made earlier. But as time has gone on, the government has not kept up the reform pace, and yet expectations have increased, partly because people see changes elsewhere. They're more acquainted with changes in the wider world, and partly because inside Kazakhstan, inequalities have become an issue, both inequalities of income, those have been an issue, and also inequalities regionally. Astana has taken such a large amount of public infrastructure spending that other oblasts around Kazakhstan have suffered in the amount of resources they have to improve public infrastructure. So I think both those vertical income inequalities, if you will, and the horizontal regional inequalities have led to a situation where there may not be real unrest that could topple a government soon, but it's enough to cause the government some concern. And in fact, this is a phenomenon that we're seeing in Russia as well. Putin's speech to the Federation Assembly about 2 weeks ago also betrayed concerns about health care and poverty, things like that. That also seems to be an issue in Kazakhstan. And in both of these countries, you have rulers who have been in power for a long time. They're not making more reforms. They're tightening up their grip, hoping to hold on, but that's not solving the social and economic problems.
Can I just add a little more facts to why such a huge reaction? I think one important factor is also that last month five children died in Astana as a result of a fire while the mother was at work, and that, as you all know, sparked a huge public mobilization demanding government accountability and support of working parents and support of children, especially families with many children. And it really connected with the broader population in Kazakhstan who feel the pain and empathize with the parents and with the children. So I think that also is really big part of reaction of Nazarbayev, that this kind of tragedies, they stir up so much action and even political action that can potentially become really powerful drive against the regime, not just a specific social issue, but against the political setup in general.
Okay, Dr. Luka, how do you see that? I mean, we referred to similar changes that Kazakhstan gone through earlier. Is it another similar change or something is fundamentally different here, the way people are responding and the way authorities are trying to address this issue?
I very much agree with Erica that it is something that started as a reaction from the fire a couple of weeks ago. But what seemed to be puzzling to me is that Kazakhstan's authoritarianism and Central Asia's regime more in general are extremely powerful over what they can impose on the population. So they don't really bow to pressure to State Mohammed. So obviously, it is a kind of very knee-jerk reaction, happened very quickly. Is it unprecedented? It is, in the sense that there hasn't been economic collapse or any kind of devaluation, any kind of oil shock. So this seems to be something that has been building up for a few months, little by little. But then, if we accept this explanation, then we should ask ourselves, how come they reacted so swiftly? And there is the elite. I think that they are feeling somehow less safe and secure. They think that their power position is getting weaker. It could be because of elite cohesion. It could be because of populist content. And I very much agree with the ambassador. It is a long goodbye, but this is a very long goodbye. I mean, we've been seeing this kind of dynamics going on since 2011. It's almost a decade now that we've seen this kind of alternation of crisis, real or invented, response. We're gonna change things, and then periodically it comes back. And every couple of years you have talks or other resignation or a snap election. So it seemed to me that if we look at the 2010s, which has to be regarded as the late Nazarbayev era, this kind of development is not unusual, especially, you know, if, what, as Bruce noticed before, the government reshuffle wasn't really a reshuffle. I mean, it was more musical chairs. They put different people in different, but there was no big loser. It wasn't really a change. So I am very puzzled. I spoke with a few people inside Kazakhstan, and It seems to me that the level of discontent that is internal to the country is much more than it can be perceived just by reading, of course, local media or Western reports. Mm-hmm. So there is something going on.
Mm-hmm. Let's take the ambassador's point in this. I mean, you know those people more than us do. Dr. Luca mentioned a couple of puzzles that the way things are in Kazakhstan today. Is there anything that you could tell us to explain what is this really about? I mean, on one hand, like, you know, when the government was making these announcements, I'm talking about the latest packages, for instance, you know, the $3.6 billion package, which includes, in fact, the 30% rise in salaries of almost every government employee. And then when these announcements were coming right outside the building, people were protesting. You know, what does that explain, really? I mean, why would one take such a risk of protesting in a country like Kazakhstan when their demands are being met?
Well, to some extent, there is some interplay between what's happening in Russia and what's happening in Kazakhstan. It's important to remember that people in Kazakhstan watch a lot of Russian television, and that social media, which is freer than the official media, social media contacts are back and forth a lot. So the Kazakhstanis have seen the pension reform protests in Moscow. Kazakhstanis have seen that President Putin recently made some promises for social and economic benefits very similar to what President Nazarbayev is doing. So I think to some extent Kazakhstanis are seeing unrest or unease in Russia and are feeding off of that to some extent themselves. And then in addition, as Erica very much pointed out, the tragic fire killing the five young girls has seemed to be a spark, if you will, that has helped ignite greater concern. But the underlying phenomena have been present all along. Unless the Kazakhstani authorities can find ways to open up more opportunities for educated young people, to open up more possibilities for private business, because now the economy is suffocating from an excess of state-controlled enterprises that are inefficient and corrupt. So the authorities really need to make some fundamental reforms to improve the quality of life of people, and that's something that, you know, these promises of greater social spending don't really reach that level. Mm. Unless measures reach that level.
So what you are saying is that authorities do not understand what they are dealing when it comes to the increasing frustration in the country.
They are not yet making systemic reforms. They're making promises of greater social spending, but until systemic reforms are made, people's lives are not likely to improve.
So you think that they understand what has to be done and what the size and scope of this problem is?
I don't know how much they actually understand, but I think within the constraints of the system, it's just very difficult for them to do much. There are a lot of vested interests that would be opposed to systemic reforms. And so unless those basic issues are addressed and fundamental reforms are made, the situation in Kazakhstan may not improve much.
Mm-hmm. What's...
Muhammad, do you mind if I just jump in for a second?
Sure.
I think they understand, but what they have to do is very painful and is diversify away from hydrocarbons. That's what they should do. The old Kazakhstani economy remains extremely reliant on oil prices, oil export. And we've seen that the last couple of infrastructure projects that they had, namely Kashagan and now there's the Kurmangazi field as well, they have not brought the kind of money that they expected. So they know, and when the ambassador very much, when he says systemic reforms, I think that he very much, at least to me, indicates that there is some kind of economic overarching agenda to be driving there. But how is that compatible to the persistence of authoritarian control? That's the question we should ask ourselves. And most importantly, that's the question that they would like, that the government should actually address. Because if they don't do that kind of overarching reforms, we're going to see more and more of the short-term social spending that do not really address the root causes of the economy, which remains reliant on one single resource.
I wonder, Bruce or Erica, what you think about this? I mean,
well, if I could jump in, I kind of understand, you know, I see that they're kind of getting an understanding of what's happening, but I don't think that they really make all the connections they do. And that kind of explains the reaction, which I thought was excessive. I was kind of surprised at all the money they threw at this and that Nazarbayev had to publicly essentially humiliate Sagantayev's government for what went on. And I think that's because they were so surprised, you know, a few years ago when they had the land privatization scheme and in the rumor rumor went out that, you know, maybe the Chinese were going to buy it. It released a bunch of other issues that people started to come out and protest. And I think that really scared them. And they saw similarities in what was happening after the fire and that the mother started protesting. And, you know, they just went into overkill immediately and started talking about all this stuff that was going to change and all this money they were going to spend, because, you know, they should have made that connection a while ago, that they needed to make improvements in the everyday lives of people, you know, and in social services and things, but they hadn't quite made it. And so when they saw these protests starting to come, they immediately equated that with what happened a few years ago and decided, you know, we're headed for the same kind of disaster. We got to take all these emergency measures to head this off. But I'm not sure they really got the message. You know, I think that they're, you know, they fell back on the same old kind of tactics that have worked for them in the past, of like, we'll make a bunch of promises that we're going to build roads, we're going to raise salaries, we're going to make things easier for the people, and we're going to get rid of some officials to show that these people that were inefficient, and that we're going to bring in people that are efficient. And if you remember the new prime minister, Oscar Mamin, one of the statements he made the other day was, this government is going to make real changes. We're going to do real work. I'm like, what was not real work that the other government was doing? I don't know why he chose those words, but he seemed to make a distinction that the previous government and administration hadn't really been working, but his government is going to show real progress.
Yeah, you know, I almost forgot another point. Yes, you know, on one hand, it's unclear, at least to me, and also I hear different messages from my panel today. It's unclear if authorities comprehend the size, the scope, and the nature of what they are dealing with. On the other hand, they proposed this multi-billion-dollar package so quickly that I'm not sure if it's fully thought through. Also, do they have enough resources to deliver this promise? So we will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate. That today I'm joined by Ambassador William Courtney, former U.S. Ambassador to Kazakhstan, Dr. Lukan Cheschi, Chair of Central Asian Studies at the Glasgow University, Dr. Erica Marat, Associate Professor at the National Defense University, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager for Central and South Asia in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing growing frustration in Kazakhstan and its significance and implications for the country and future of the government. So let's start with you, Erica. So it appears that some of you already have mentioned that the plan was announced in response to growing pressure. So whose idea does this plan represent?
So, okay, I agree with everything what has been said by the other three speakers. It is about the political setup of decision-making in Kazakhstan. Really smart people are at the top of the political life in Kazakhstan, the presidential administration, that come up with amazing ideas. They use international development or international experience and coming up with really modernist ideas about what is it that the society needs. The problem is they really implement something that they think the population needs, and not really consulting with the population or not staging bigger public conversations about what is it that is needed, especially in rural areas. And the idea, this idea of progress, of joining the top most developed countries that the presidential administration is entirely consumed by, it really puts a huge emphasis on developing urban areas, modernizing urban areas, and delivering to the middle class population who are already quite okay in the economy that Kazakhstan has. And really little emphasis is done on rural areas. So it's, again, it repeats this pattern of coming up with policies that may sound good on paper and may sound good on paper for the middle class and urban areas, but don't really consider the reality on the ground. And as Luca said, really throwing money on short-term fixes as opposed to approaching it from a more fundamental perspective and, for instance, setting up good education, improving labor conditions, improving healthcare, and so on in rural areas. And this is something that Kazakhstan has been repeating over and over again for the last decade.
So what you are saying is what this package includes, there is no new idea. It's just a kind of, you know, repeated again and again in Kazakhstan and previous years.
fix this. It's like they're good on paper, and they might bring something good for supporting families with many children. They're good on paper, but they kind of giveaways from the government, kind of little gifts here and there from the government without changing the more structural condition in the society and allowing families with many children, especially from rural areas, to gain good education or to gain some kind of vocational training and participate in labor market and be able to demand better labor conditions. So this is something that the government has not done yet, and just embarked on this idea of through some subsidies here and there, quick fixes here and there that look good on paper and make government look generous would fix more longer-term problems.
Talking about longer-term problems, some of the fundamental changes that Erica was mentioning, Dr. Luca, let me come to you here. You know, that takes some time. But even talking about this small, this package, and it's been just a month, maybe less than a month, since the new government is in office. Still talking about the small changes that we see in this package. When they worked out of this, I mean, I'm just questioning the thoughtfulness of this entire plan, and let alone talking about the long-term projects, for example.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it hasn't been thought through, has it? Like, we really see that there is this explosion of discontent with the death of children and women, which is a kind of issue that, you know, family is very important across the region as a structure of society. So that's the kind of issue that would have a very wide echo across Kazakhstan. So they reacted to that. Did they really plan this? Probably not. It seemed to me the kind of short-term reaction that they felt they had to do something. And here I think that we need to have a serious discussion about how the government is conceptualized by Nazarbayev. Is for relatively minor protests, of course, coupled with a lot of discontent going on, he feels that he can sack the whole government. What he tells the population that he is the one that does not have any fault into it. So it's a very self-absolutory, if you want, presidential position here, pointing the finger at the government as if he hasn't been presiding over the country for 25 years. So it kind of put distance between the president and the mess that is going around the country, which is a mess that the population recognizes because they've been protesting. So it is a kind of, if you want, political move by Nazarbayev, especially at the time in which he approaches 80 years old and 30 years in power now. So to me, it seems that if the economics of the reaction are very opaque and difficult to understand, the politics are very clear. The politics are connected to the fact that Nazarbayev cannot be seen as someone who's at fault for the economic problem of the country and shift the responsibility on the government. And the government is disposable, the president isn't.
Yeah. Okay, Bruce, let's imagine that the latest changes does help to address at least some of the frustration in short terms that we discussed and we kind of agreed. I believe it's not an annual budget allocation month in Kazakhstan at the moment. So where is this money coming from? At least parts of the plan requires immediate cash flow, right? And like the raise in salaries.
Yeah, well, you know, they took it from their fund that's from the Sovereign Wealth Fund, I think. Which is their insurance fund, ultimately for times of crisis. So they have the money. I mean, there's what, $80+ billion or something in there. The amount of money they're spending is not even 10% of what they got that they could use. So, you know, it's a quick fix, you know, in the end. It sounds like a great figure, especially when you put it into Kazakh tenge. You know, it's like 2 trillion plus tenge or something like that. So it sounds like a lot of money. They're making a lot of promises about what it's going to go to. You know, the sad thing about this is that this stuff kind of tapers off after a while. There's some in the next couple months, we'll see a lot of things changing. I'm sure it'll be noticeable, but it'll become less so after a while. And I think that's because there will be less actual progress toward meeting any of these goals. I'm still going with they're just trying to diffuse this. This is trying to just patch over this as fast as they can and move on. Because, you know, the one thing we haven't mentioned in this conversation, which I think also plays a big role in what's going on in government decision making now, is they have a parliamentary and presidential elections next year. Mm-hmm. Now, whether Nazarbayev intends to stand for re-election or not, you can't have social discontent, you know, in the lead up to the election. So they're going to have to do something. to boost government popularity ahead of this. Now, we know they're sham elections anyway, but that's not the point. If you have protests, like if you have scenes of, like we saw outside Nur-Otan headquarters when they were meeting, or what, you know, nationwide protests like we saw a few years ago when the land privatization, this really, it's the elections aren't real anyway, but it just further discredits that if you have the visual images of people protesting and you know, Nazarbayev Ketsin. Yeah. You know, I mean, go leave office. So this is not what they want when they're going to hold elections next year.
Yeah. You know, talking about the election, Ambassador Courtney, you know, is there any connection between these changes in the election?
Yes. What we're seeing in Kazakhstan now is a development that President Nazarbayev probably is worried that the next election could be more controversial than past elections because of the social and economic unease. And so these are measures, the social and economic spending are measures, but they are really too little too late. They're not going to do enough to make a big difference before the election. If he really wants to improve the situation and raise people's expectations that the government is going in the right direction, he needs to begin opening up the political discourse now. It will be important for Kazakhstan not to wait until after President Nazarbayev has left the political scene before it has a more open debate about its future and the direction the country wants to go. That process should start now. If it were to start now, it would be helpful for the government to be seen leading this more open discussion rather than resisting. But thus far, we have not seen the government willing to do that. So President Nazarbayev has made a story. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, even if they would start, I mean, this process, the process that you mentioned, where they would start that? Where? What would be the indication?
So releasing journalists from jail would be a good place to start. Allowing the opposition to have more public discussion. Small-scale demonstrations, for example, are being repressed now. There's no need for the government to repress small-scale demonstrations. Those are not really a threat to public order. So it's not too difficult to start. The government is probably worried that it can't control everything. Well, it won't be able to control all the public discussion, but it will be very stabilizing for Kazakhstan and its future if the more open discussion begins now.
Yeah, you know, in this situation, like, it also looks to me that Kazakhs are lately waiting to have an excuse to protest. I mean, it's just not the one which was taking place outside the government building during the Nur-Otan party gathering this week, or previously by mothers, but you know, we have seen this time and again, and small development quickly leads to masses taking the street. And now that they have seen they can influence, I mean, these protests can influence the government. In fact, in part, their pressure led to the sacking of the government and prompted the new government to announce these packages. So what do you see, Dr. Luka, where things are headed going forward in the light of all these frustrations, lack of change, and lack of change on behalf of authorities to look into some of the real issues that you mentioned?
I think we're going to see more of the same. It is my impression that we have been seeing this alternation of snap election, shorter measures, and periodical reshuffles since 2011 now. So I don't think we are in for a major change. I think that we're going to see the long twilight of Nazarbayev being surrounded by a disposable prime minister, easy to reshuffle government, and periodic economic crisis. So I don't think the president has got the policy drive to make long-term changes. He probably doesn't need those kind of changes because it's financially okay, so it's comfortable with the system as it is. I don't think the government intends, or the elite intends to challenge Nazarbayev at making major changes. I also don't think that the population in general, that there is enough opposition to organize a large-scale movement.
But
that's probably the why repress small scale as well, because they can do that.
But the recent changes didn't embolden people. It was in part their pressure which led to all these changes.
Yeah, but if you look at the mothers' protest, that's not a political protest. That's the kind of reaction to poor governance, but it doesn't have a kind of political agenda with it. Those mothers would have been not in the street if whatever happened didn't happen. So it's not that there is a political agenda there. So yes, you're right. It's a response to that. But your position is very much tamed in Kazakhstan, as elsewhere in Central Asia. if you look at the years and the month and ahead, to me, it's going to be more of the same. I mean, there is this big question, will Nazarbayev run or won't run? That's probably the only thing which can change the wider scenario. But otherwise, I would not be surprised if we're having very similar chats in 1 year or 2 years' time. I mean, the way in which these regimes work, and it's the same in Uzbekistan now, is that the policy drive and the policy agency, it is very much in the president's hands.
Yeah.
So if the president doesn't want something to happen, this thing doesn't happen. Whereas on the contrary, if the president is keen about making something happening, the people do actually make that happen, the government. So I don't think that Nazarbayev has got either the energy or the inclination to make this kind of large-scale change which are extremely necessary. So to me, to answer your question, what will we see? We will see the same again in a prolonged twilight.
I know, Erika, you want to leave us, but before you do, I was interested to hear what you had to say about this. I mean, Dr. Luca said that, you know, there is no willingness on behalf of authorities to make some of the fundamental changes that he mentioned and also you mentioned. Okay, so they are not ready to change, but the people seems to be more vocal and now a little bit emboldened. So where things are headed going forward?
So, yes, it is a long twilight. And I think the weaker Nazarbayev looks at some point, I don't know, in terms of political support or popularity of his policies or even health-wise, the more there might be push back from opposition forces or from politically oriented demonstrations. What's interesting about Kazakhstan's approach to demonstrations, yes, they are suppressed pretty quickly, is Kazakhstan, since Genozdan, Kazakhstan has been trying to preempt those demonstrations through policing, through predictive policing across the country. But the leadership in Kazakhstan and across Central Asia should also understand that those protests often take place because this is the only outlet to be heard. And because parliaments don't represent the population, there's no representation of public interest in the parliament or in the political scene in general. And the small protests, even protests regarding some really non-political, deeply social issues like the mothers, they have this potential of turning into political opposition, political resistance as well, depending on how the government responds. If the government uses more violence, more coercive actions, there is a greater possibility that these protests will become against the means of coercion, against the means of political suppression. The government has avoided doing exactly that. Was the mothers protesting? But who knows what other collective action will be in the coming months and years as the twilight continues. And yeah, there is a possibility. I think there is a possibility for, unfortunately, for more unrest and calamity in political life in Kazakhstan.
So what the source of this potential unrest might be, Erika, and what are some of the tipping points that you will be looking at?
So it's extremely difficult to predict what kind of collective action will transpire, right? Because so many factors go into collective action. We saw it around land reform, around labor conditions, and now mothers. So it can be a tragedy. It can be some unpopular policy. It's hard to predict, but the momentum is there. There is more and more experience in the public dealing with this. And if we know anything from history, unless the government completely chooses a route to intensifying authoritarianism even more, like, for instance, Russia, those protest moods are not going anywhere, and they will continue percolate from time to time.
Okay. Thank you very much. We are almost over time. Just to take final points from the rest of the panel, maybe Ambassador Courtney. So what you will be looking at going forward in Kazakhstan, especially the frustration continues to grow, authorities are not willing to change, then what? I mean, what are the avenues that you are looking at where this country is headed?
So I agree with Erika that there are conditions here that could create some unease and unrest. I would look primarily to civil society. How strong is civil society? It's clearly gotten stronger, but there has not been enough political space for civil society to express itself. Civil society can be an important stabilizing force in Kazakhstan, but it can also be a force for change.
Yeah.
I would look for dimensions in which civil society focuses its energies, and whether the political system will allow that to take place or whether there will be arbitrary measures used against civil society.
Okay. Bruce and Dr. Luca, your thoughts on this?
Sadly, I think history is going to repeat itself a lot in Kazakhstan. I think that the government will sit back for a month or two. We'll see a lot of action. I don't think it's any coincidence that the Ministry of Information is now the Ministry of Information and Social Development. They'll keep advertising the fact that things are changing all the time and get that message out to the public as much as possible. You mentioned earlier, you know, about this plan that they put into action. I would say probably part of that is based on a plan that they almost undoubtedly had anyway ahead of elections to, like, you know, improve living conditions. We've seen this again and again. And after that runs out, you know, when they've shown a picture of roads being built or schools being built, something like that, I don't think they have any plans any further than that. And like I said, this was a plan they were probably bound to implement on maybe a lesser scale, but ahead of elections anyway. And so I don't think they've learned their lesson. And I think if public discontent quells, as it almost certainly will, in the coming 2 or 3 months down the road, that they'll figure that they patched everything up and they can go on as usual.
Okay, Dr. Luca?
No, I totally agree. I think that we're going to see the eternal repetition of the same, or we want to see it. I mean, which makes me worrying how the population in Kazakhstan seeing what's happening in Uzbekistan, because they look at each other and they realize that there is much more vitality going on in the neighboring republic that used to be. So this could be something that interesting and may have a domestic role. I mean, seeing that there is a possibility to implement fundamental change and this government is simply not taking it. So the ambassador used the expression long goodbye. It's Kazakhstani political scientists use this, the Twilight Zone expression to describe where we are. I think that we're exactly there. We're going to see more of the same and the periodic repetition of this kind of crisis with very much sensational responses, throwing a lot of money for not very much of an apparent reason, which is kind of sad because it impacts on the legacy of Nazarbayev, but that's where we are. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. Ambassador, just a quick note from you. Do you think Nazarbayev is going to run for the election in the upcoming process?
You're in the hot seat now.
That's a difficult question. You know, as you know, the head of the Senate, Ambassador Takayev, not long ago said he thought President Nazarbayev would not run. But in that system, if he does not run, then someone else would have to be brought forward. But President Nazarbayev, because of a recent law, would still chair the National Security Council and have a lot of power. So that may be one way for him to ease away from some of the day-to-day control of government. But that will not be reform. And what really is required to address the unease in Kazakhstan is reform, and not just moving some of the boxes around in the government.
Yeah, but it's just such an interesting question. I wanted to end this. You know, if Nazarbayev has to stay in this the other way, as a president or the supreme leader, whatever, after this age, do you really expect that he's going to make any changes in his thinking, the way of his leadership, the vision that he has about Kazakhstan?
In the cases where we've seen leaders in power for a long time, the long goodbyes, the twilights, Karimov, Shevardnadze, Putin, Nazarbayev, toward the ends of their administrations, no reforms are made. Generally, reforms move in reverse, and so you end up with greater frustration. And, of course, we've seen that now in Uzbekistan, where Mirziyoyev is trying to accommodate some expectations for more change. Whether that's successful is not yet clear. But the reforms generally do not come when leaders are in their twilight period.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Ambassador William Courtney, former U.S. Ambassador to Kazakhstan. And also big thanks goes to Dr. Lokan Chisti, Chair of Central Asian Studies at the Glasgow University, Dr. Erika Marat, Associate Professor at the National Defense University, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.